Hello and welcome to Boy Diaries podcast, where we explore wellness and self-healing for women over 40. My name is Fiona Mzee and I'll be your host. The subject today is midlife. And my guest is a lady called Kay Newton, who is an award-winning international speaker and author. Kay is an enthusiastic and midlife strategist whose clients love her straight talking and no-nonsense practical holistic help dealing with life at 50 and over. Kay's books include The Art of Midlife Stress Busting, 7 Steps to Declutter Your Mind Without Pills or Potions, and How to Clean Your Home Organically and Distress Your Surroundings. Hi Kay, thank you for joining Aboli Podcast Diaries. I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Fiona. This is really exciting. It's ages since we met.
It has been a long time. What, 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years. I can't believe it. Where has time gone?
I know. And that was, I think, in Malaysia.
It was, when that was an exciting time as well. I remember it really well.
Yeah. Those are vivid memories I have. It was a really good time. So tell us a bit about yourself, Kay.
So, Fiona, this is what I love this question. When you say a little bit about yourself, when we get to this age in our lives, we've got so much to tell each other. So let me just really briefly sum it up for you. I was born in the north of England, just outside Leeds. My parents loved sailing, and after my time doing a degree in Hull, I went down to the marina there where my parents had a small boat, and there was a very big boat there. And at the time I was working in a retail outlet and bullied by the manager, and I used to go down to the boat regularly for my sandwich and a good cry. And because this big boat had come in, I asked the lock keeper where it was going, and he said it's going to Mallorca, Spain. And so I literally jumped on board, left my life behind, sailed to Mallorca, and I never swam back, and I've been living in Mallorca for the last 35 years.
Wow.
Met my husband here. He's from South Africa. We married and have had 2 boys who have both grown and flown the nest, and we've had loads of exciting adventures. One of them, in 2015, we decided to leave our luxury lifestyle behind. Our 5-bedroomed home with swimming pool and 4 acres of land. And we moved to a 2-roomed tin-roofed house by the beach in Zanzibar. And that's where I learned all about simplicity.
Wow. Wow. I remember seeing photographs on Facebook of Zanzibar. And, oh my gosh, the beaches are to die for. Really beautiful.
They are stunning beaches. Yeah, really, really special place.
Yeah. So what inspired you then to start work as a midlife strategist?
So there's another story. I remember, again, one of those vivid memories, sitting by the pool with a good friend of mine, and we were both sort of lamenting about our extra large tummies and doing something about it. And I looked over at my oldest boy, he was 9 at the time, and thought, oh, in another 9 years, he's going to be leaving home. What am I going to do when he goes? You know, here I am as a stay-at-home mum and looking after, we did rent out the property as well, so a bit of a landlady stroke living at home. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to be really lonely. What am I going to do? And one of our clients had left a stack of magazines from the UK. And I opened one of the magazines, and there was an article about life coaching. And I thought, you know, I did psychology and sociology at university. I think this would really be something for me. And so I trained. So nearly 20 years ago, I suppose now, I found a course that suited my lifestyle with the boys at home, and I became a life coach.
Okay. And was that, did you have in mind women in particular of a certain age?
I think I actually started my niche. I think at the time I was really interested in the development of my boys and their education and the things they were struggling with. And I was really keen to start working life coaching with teenagers. So it's a very it can be a very difficult time of life. And it was interesting to see that the people that I ended up coaching were actually not the kids. It tended to be the mums.
Yeah.
And so that's when I switched. I thought the mums are the ones with the money and the mums are the ones who really have the issues. And so I've really progressed and worked with my age group in a way. So my coaching tends to move slightly as I get a little bit older.
Okay. Okay. I was just going to ask, do you find women in midlife, or should we say who are approaching the or in their 40s, start looking for new ways to define themselves?
I think in the 40s, maybe not so much. We've got we can have perimenopause around 40. And that can go on for 10 years until you hit menopause around 50. And it can be a very hormonal time, especially if you've got kids, because quite often you're going through that hormonal process as your kids are. But I don't think we really get to the defining point until we come to the end of our 40s, when we do hit menopause and all of a sudden there's a realization that you are in the next stage of your life. And for some people, the thought process is this is the final stage. And there's a wake-up call to, is this really what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Yeah, yeah. And do you find there's also, a stigma around menopause?
I personally didn't find a stigma around menopause. And I think in the Spanish culture, it's probably not the same. They still have extended families here and everybody has a role within the family. And so the matriarch is still an important person. Normally when they get to the menopausal age, their children are having children and they become the grandparents. So there's a switching of roles. But I never felt a stigma around it, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah. Because I was also wondering if women start feeling quite vulnerable as well, or kind of, like you said, some people, I guess, because they have a role to play, that they switch roles. But do you find some actually even question their role in the family?
Yeah, I think there is a wake-up call. But it's not just your role in the family. I think it's to do with everything. And, it can be just literally going, is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? Is my job really satisfying? Have I got to the highest level? Is it worth me traveling to work like I am doing every day? I'm getting older and it's more tiring. Do I really want to do this for the next 15 years? Is this relationship that I'm in really working? And the relationship can be your relationship with your partner, or it could be just your friendship relationships. Maybe you feel you've grown or they've grown away from you. And so they can, and this thing of emptiness, of the children leaving home. And in today's world, of course, we've got the boomerang kids, the kids who are coming back.
Yeah.
And they're no longer kids when they come back. So you've got to behave in a different way towards them. So it's a natural switch, I think. And part of it is due to our bodies, I think, as well.
Yeah, I imagine that plays quite a big role. I was curious to find out more about your book, The Art of Midlife Stress Busting. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit more about that, especially with talks about decluttering your mind, without pills and potions?
So I wrote the book when I was in Zanzibar, and that was one of the nice things about being in Zanzibar. Quite often the electric company would just turn off the electricity.
Yeah.
So providing the computer was charged, I could sit quietly because it was too hot to move around without fans, and I could sit and type and write. So I wrote the book, and it's meant to be what I call a coffee reading book. It's a very simple book. It's very short, and the concept is you read a chapter 7 days and then you can go off and do the work. You can do the thought processing and sit and change the things you need to change in your life. And when I talk about decluttering, one of the most important things, you know, when we think of decluttering, we think of our environment, our externals, removing extra clothes or just the extra books we've got or whatever it may be. But the biggest area to declutter is our mindset, to get rid of all the things that no longer serve us. And that takes time and patience, really. And it's something we tend to forget to do because we can't physically unzip our head, take out our brain and look at it and go, oh, that area needs a good old dust, or that area needs a good old prune because it's no longer useful. So we have to do the work on ourselves.
Yeah. So for anyone who hasn't done any kind of work like this or would like to, how would they go about starting to declutter their mind? Or what would the first steps be?
Again, it's an individual thing, and you'll find your own way of doing it. For me, the best way is to spend some time in contemplation. Now, contemplation is different than meditation. It's maybe sitting with a journal. Not everybody likes writing down in a journal. If you're a person who does like to write, I personally do, I'm a writer, then you would write down your thoughts, and you do this without really consciously looking at what you're writing on the paper. And then you can go back and have a look and reflect at what's been said. I call it verbal vomiting to start with. It's about taking out whatever's in your head and putting it on the paper. For some, it may be recording. You may prefer to walk around with your phone and just record something. And for other people, they may find it's if they're doing something with art, or they're just outside in nature stroking the cat. And as long as it's space, this is the key. The word is space here. It's a nothing space.
Okay. So is it really a lot of it? If I'm understanding this, it's taking time out to be with yourself and with your thoughts?
It is, and to listen to those thoughts. It doesn't have to be huge amounts of space either. You could be doing it while you're washing up. You can literally stop yourself and go, what am I thinking? And you may be surprised to listen that a lot of people are thinking the same thoughts day in, day out, week in, week out. And it's about, if that thought's not serving you anymore, what am I going to think differently?
Okay, that makes sense. And do you find also it's useful or helpful for women at this stage in their life, perhaps starting the perimenopause or menopause, to have other women around them who perhaps have gone through this phase?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it gives you confidence and surety that it's normal and it's natural to be feeling quite emotional or whatever it may be that you're going through. And I think also it's very important to have your own counsel. And sometimes this is difficult to have due to your circumstances. So having somebody who can provide you a safe space so that you can do your own thinking and your own sorting out becomes important. So, yeah, I think having other people in your life at this stage is really, really good.
And what would you say for the extended family, so husbands, you know, boyfriends or children, in terms of them supporting women through this phase of their life? Because sometimes maybe we're focusing a lot on the women, which is great. But maybe how do we get family members and friends to understand that maybe a woman might be going through a challenging time and she, you know, she needs help, and how can they support the women in their lives?
I think that's a really good point. I think it's also really interesting when you think about it. You know, I think about my own menopause stage, and my husband was probably going through andropause at the time. We don't talk about that very much. And my kids were definitely going through hormonal teenagers, you know, late teens. And so the whole family was going through upheavals in a natural way. And I think the best way of dealing with all that is to have fun, is to laugh about it and not hide it, you know, not pretend nothing's wrong. And if you do feel like crying, just say, oh, you know, sorry, I'm having, you know, one of my hormonal moments. If you find yourself snappy and crabby, and again, laughing about it and saying, excuse me, it's just my hormones talking. You'll find then the rest of the family will be doing the same. And that's really important. So that you're getting support in that you're making it a normality. And I think that's important.
So demystifying it in a way.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yeah, because I think sometimes I find maybe it's the embarrassment or not wanting to talk about it probably then means people don't understand what you might be going through.
Yeah, I think it's a generational thing as well. You know, I remember going to school and hitting my period and not knowing what was going on, thinking I was dying because my mother had never spoke to me about it. Going home and oh, it's okay, it's just normal. I think we've learned from that generation that's not the way to behave, that we do need to talk about this. And the more open you are about it and the more you talk about it as a natural occurrence, the more everybody's able to cope with it.
Yeah, that's very important. So tell us how it works specifically. How would you guide a woman through, say, I don't know, a coaching session? What would you do with her?
So everybody's unique and individual, and I think this is really, really important. I don't offer programs on purpose because I think we do get something out of programs, but the percentage-wise is probably not as good as having a one-on-one session where you can speak about your specific issues. And that's the nearest I can get to telling you how I do my coaching sessions, because it's sitting down with that individual and them telling me where they are and where they want to go, and me holding a space for them to work out how they're going to do it. Nobody needs fixing, and I am not a fixer. I am just a space creator so that people can find their way forward.
I like that. I like that description. And do you find with women you've worked with culturally, are there many differences, say, with a European or maybe, I don't know, Asian cultures or African cultures for a woman going through this transition in her life?
I think there's huge differences. I think if you speak to somebody from Asia, they'll probably tell you menopause, what's that? Although they go through it, it's such a natural process for them, and they tend to suffer very few symptoms. And that's due to their lifestyles, I'm sure. Here, again, in Spain, it's culturally different. And I think it's important to remember that, because we do have our cultural understanding from where we've come. For me, providing they speak English, I prefer to do my work in English. It's not a problem, because for me, it's not about the cultural differences. Literally, it comes back to holding the space for them and just nudging them in the right direction, making sure they have the right questions that they can look into.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask if, say, you were advising younger women, not advising, or perhaps passing on your wisdom to young women, what would you suggest they do coming into this phase of their life, say, you know, mid-40s onwards?
I think hindsight's a wonderful thing, and having that crystal ball. So again, it's unique and individual. And what you do will depend on you. Definitely look at your health. And I have a thing called a life table, which I use as a way of auditing where people are at in their life. But one of those sturdy legs of a four-legged table is health. So look at, are you exercising and sleeping well now? And then start and look at the things that you're eating. Go as natural as you can. And you'll be surprised how reducing your alcohol intake and your sugar intake will help you with your menopausal and perimenopausal symptoms. And making sure you hydrate yourself and you exercise well. And the other thing that we don't talk about a lot, is becoming more and more apparent, is that there's hormonal benders out there in your toiletries and your cleaning products around your house. And so we're very good at looking at the back of a label on a food packet and saying, oh, that's got too many chemicals and E numbers in it. But how about turning over that bottle of bleach or whatever you're picking up to go and clean your home and having a look at what is in that? And if possible, eliminating it completely from your life. And you'll find that will make a big difference to how you feel during menopause.
Wow. Okay. Kay, I've really enjoyed having this conversation with you. Where can people find you? What's your website or social media handle?
Yeah, look for me on my website. You'll find all the social media handles on the website anyway, but it's www.kaynewton.com. How's that for you?
Great. And before we finish, I always ask my guests, what is one thing or lesson they'd like listeners to take away?
Be yourself. You are unique. You're an individual. You are part of the collective, but you're still you. So the word I use is sensibly selfish. It's this, the concept of putting yourself first. When you are full of energy and in the right place, you will emanate that energy to those you love the most. It's not the other way around. It's not about you giving as much as you can until you've got an empty vessel. Think about making sure you're coming from a place of fullness, and that way you'll emanate that really good energy out to other people.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kay, for joining me today, and I look forward to reading more of your work.
Fiona, it's been a pleasure being with you. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you so much for joining me this week. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, visit www.abwoolidarispodcast.com. That's abwoolidarispodcast.com. And before you go, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they're released. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd really appreciate it if you shared it with friends and family.